is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now, what a special day. Well, first off, the golf show is going to be on, and it's going to be on live. And joining us right now from the golf show is Jim Moore. And so, special day today, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing great, Professor. Thanks for having me today. I really appreciate it. Yeah, we're going to be talking about the Boeing Classic at noon, so looking forward to that.
Having been out of town, what have I missed so far in the Boeing Classic? How's it been?
The Boeing Classic, John, you want an update?
I do.
Okay, an update of the Boeing Classic. Kent Jones, Scott Parrell, and Tom Pernice Jr. all shot 65s to share the first round lead yesterday. Fred Couples, everyone's always interested in how Freddie's doing, the local guy, at minus one. Kind of a tough day for him. He double bogeyed the par 3 17th. And so it'll be tough for him to get back in the hunt, but should be an exciting weekend out there at Snoqualmie Ridge.
No, it's good stuff, and hopefully the attendance is good, because I think, you know, there's this area should get more, you know, one more of these a year. I think it's been kind of on the cusp of getting that, but I mean, it should be a regular stop, I think.
Well, yeah, especially, you know, the players really like coming out here too, because you think about the PGA Championship. They played it in St. Louis with the humidity and heat there at Bellerive, and then to come out here, especially a cool weekend like we're having with temperatures in the 60s, I think the players really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll get a PGA Tour regular stop at some point, John.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that'd be great to see, and so that'll be kind of fun. And have you made it out there yet?
Well, I have not, but I was out there for media day, and it was kind of fun for me because I took one of my kids, Stevie, out there to play, and it's sure fun. You know, one of the things, John, when you go out there, I would encourage people to go out to the 14th hole because it's just such a unique hole where the players take a risk to go for the green in one from the tee box, or they can lay up and try and get a birdie that way. The Alaska Airlines Canyons Club out there, you get half-price beer, Professor, half-price beers for every time a player makes a birdie out there. So it's really
nice.
Fun. You know, you take the shot over the ravine there, and it's really a cool atmosphere.
That's fantastic. Hey, so on another side, do you get a chance to watch the game last night?
Well, you want total honesty from me, Professor?
Always.
I saw the first half.
Oh, well, that's all you need to see.
And I'm going to watch the second half later, but I thought, you know, it was getting around 7 o'clock. It gets dark around 8, and River hadn't done anything all day, so I took him to Luther Burbank Park and took him for a swim. But, no, I was impressed with what I saw, John.
Yeah, there were a lot of good things. I mean, certainly some more things on defense that need to be worked out, but I thought the tackling was good. I thought they did much better stopping the run. That was encouraging because that's a big issue right now. But I think the fact that the offense and the offensive line and the running backs look good, that I thought was very encouraging.
Well, yeah, it was a little bit surprising, too, because we know how stout Minnesota's defense was last year, and you think about how they did in the first half. And early on, I was going, oh, no, because it was – at one point, they had a three and out, and I think Minnesota had run 25 plays to their three plays, and then they got it clicking, though. That 12-play drive for 75 yards, culminated by Chris Carson, the 6-yard touchdown. And what do you think of Effetti last night, John? Because he
better.
Yeah, it seemed like he was improved. He had a good block on Carson's touchdown run, and overall, I think it was encouraging to see what he did last night.
The amazing one was George Fant, because now you did not see this. I saw it because particularly, you know, for a whole quarter he was out there on the right side, and so he was pointing to me because I was over by the Viking bench. And he held up really well, you know, because I think he set his body up in the right area. And this is where I guess his basketball ability really helped him out, because he was able to, you know, stay low, kind of keep the guy in front of him, and if the guy ended up you know, getting a little past him, he was able to get that push to the outside. You know, he may have been beaten once, but of all the plays, I don't think he got really beaten at all. Yeah, he made a false start. I mean, there's certainly a lot of other things he needs to clean up for it, but for a guy who's never played right tackle before to make that conversion in 4 days, particularly with the limited experience that he has, I think is remarkable.
Well, it is, and speculation was that he was maybe going to stay at left tackle as he came back, and so then the shift to right tackle, which made sense to give Effetti some competition. Do you think now that Fant has a chance to start against Denver, or is that asking too much?
I think that's asking too much, but I think what it does, it basically now has the guy that can challenge him, because they were struggling to find that. You know, Isaiah Battle was there for a while, then in the opener he had to be carted off with a knee injury. I mean, he played left tackle, but so that he was no longer a challenger. They moved Jamarco Jones, who had been promising at left tackle, over, and he got the bad high ankle sprain and had to get the operation, so he was done. And so then what was going to be the next move? Take DJ Fluker from right guard to right tackle, maybe take Ethan Posick and move him over from left guard to right tackle. I don't think you have to now consider that. I think the deal is closed. They were able to get good play out of Fant, and so I think what the idea is that you go in, because one of the things that Russell Wilson's been saying the last couple weeks has been he likes the continuity on the offensive line. And so if the continuity means that Ifedi is still out there, then I think that's good as long as he can hold up. But now, where they really didn't have a quick option to go to if necessary, now I think they have a challenger to the job, and that's George Fant. So I think that kind of cleaned that up. So I think Ifedi starts, but it's almost like he's a pitcher that if he has a bad inning, I mean, you yank him quick. I mean, there's a quick hook that's there that really wasn't there for the previous couple weeks.
Well, yeah, certainly it's a positive development over there, John. And there were so many things to like about the game last night. And, people can say what they want about it being preseason, but you've mentioned this is the main dress rehearsal for the for the opener. And we know that the game against Oakland, we're not going to see the starters out there for very long. And, the thing, Professor, and I know everybody's talking about the punter, and I love the punter too, and it's cool what he can do with the ball, and it's amazing how he can get the ball to not only, John, how does he do that? He gets it to bite like a golf ball, since we're talking, the golf show at noon today. He gets it to bite, and then he gets it to go out of bounds too. So I don't know how he can get both of those things to happen.
It's basically what he learned over in Australia for the rules football, is just how to be able to hit the ball a certain way. And, I mean, like, for example, I remember talking to him after the game last week. And so he has all these bags of tricks that, I think every rules player has, in the sense that, it's like a golfer. I mean, he knows how to, if it's a golfer hitting the fade, I mean, he can hit the fade a certain way. If you're pitching to the green, I mean, you can pitch it a certain way with whatever spin, if you wanted to go, what backwards or all that stuff, and he has that. And you can see the perfection. You didn't see this probably, but one of the things he does in his warm-ups is that he does the crane, as you call it, and or the karate kid, where he'll stand on his left leg, he'll take his right leg and lift it up to where the kneecap is on the left leg, and then kind of hold the ball in his foot, and then kind of bounce it, and then kick it 50-60 yards. But one of the things that he's able to do is different ways that he either has spin or no spin on the ball coming down, and he can put it so that like last night, he put the ball 61 yards and put it at the 2-yard line and had it bounce out. I mean, last week he had the 57 yarder, and he had the spin so that the only way that there was one of two things that was going to happen: the returner was going to catch it and go out of bounds, or the ball was going to go out of bounds. I mean, the guy, I have never seen one like him. He's remarkable.
Well, and I appreciate, too, John, on the one that he had. Again, I didn't see it, but I read about it, where he felt like he outkicked his coverage. And it was the way he explained it, and BB had a nice return. But it was cool that Dixon himself made the tackle on the return. And then the way he explained it, though, where, I kicked it too far down the middle, and he knew it right away that he had outkicked his coverage. And, boy, next time I'm going to make sure I kick it a little farther to the left. And, boy, the guy just has it down to a science.
Yeah, because it was funny because, I was behind him on the sidelines, and I was looking, and I could see that it's so funny because, I mean, he outkicked the coverage, but it was almost like a lob kick, because, I mean, he didn't put, a lot of power behind it, but the ball just flew. And so, it was a mistake. And, just like the week before, John Ryan outkicked the coverage and they had to return. So you can see that's something that he can learn from. But as a guy, I mean, he's only been doing this, like, 5 years.
And John, you think about it, with the defense in transition, with all the new players the younger guys that they're going to have out there, they're going to have struggles at some point. But with this kid pinning the opponent deep, and you have all the stats, Professor, on it, I know that the Vikings drove 97 yards last night, but chances are most teams aren't going to be driving that far, and if they do, they'll get 3 points out of it at most. So this guy's truly a weapon for the Seahawks.
Sure, because it's not just a matter of the ball placement and the drive starts and stuff of that nature, but also he's going to be in the position where he kicks it and they're not going to be able to catch it. There's going to be times where the ball is going to be such that you saw that twice in the Indianapolis game, that you don't know how the ball is coming down and you can't judge it because it's either going to have no spin or spin, and it comes down almost like a knuckleball, and you're kind of guessing where you're going to try to catch it, and if you miss it, that's going to be a turnover. I mean, there's going to be times where he can create turnovers.
Do you know the rules on drop kicks? Because I'm looking forward to seeing this guy do a drop kick. And
oh,
I think didn't he do one in one of the preseason games where he just kind of
did
a little pooch drop kick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that'll be fun to see, too. The other thing, Professor, that I really enjoyed seeing, and I've been talking about it on Danny David Moore, and, you know, sometimes when I make a suggestion, people are like, they can't do that. Well, I know Pete Carroll's philosophy on defense is always to rush four and not blitz too much, but I love the fact that Ken Norton is thinking about blitzing more. We saw it with Coleman last night, and my thinking is if you got the pass rush and everybody concerned about the pass rush, well, you can help yourself out with sending an extra guy, and I know you run the risk of getting beat deep and man-to-man coverage and all that type of thing, but still, I like the mixing it up and at least getting the quarterback off balance.
Right, no question, and then do it from different ways, too, because, you know, you've seen now what last week they blitzed Trey Flowers. Justin Coleman had two blitzes that were pretty close to each other, and they were able to get that pressure, which I think is just great. And when I remember in the OTAs, Bobby Wagner was talking about that, saying that, hey, I think we can try to talk Ken Norton Jr. into trying to do some blitzes. And, you know, Bobby Wagner has had a 5-sack season. So I think that really augments the team. Now, certainly, we saw in the one blitz that Coleman had, some guys got out of position and allowed a completion. But, I mean, Coleman can get to the quarterback. Flowers can get to the quarterback. So I really like what they're doing with that. And I think it's going to be a good weapon for them.
Well, yeah, it's just, with the younger guys coming in there, and no matter how good you are, even the Legion of Boom, when you don't get a pass rush, those guys will get beat on occasion, too. And, mm-hmm. John, what about the wide receiver competition? We saw some good things from Brandon Marshall last night, and David Moore continued to have a good performance, too, in the preseason. But who's going to end up being the sixth receiver, do you think? I mean,
I think it's going to be Marcus Johnson. I think he's going to beat out Stringfellow, Amara Darbo, and Keenan Reynolds. And the reason I say that is because he was on the kickoff coverage. I mean, he wasn't on the first kickoff coverage, but he moved in there for the second because he was the guy on the, let's see, the right side next to Sebastian Janikowski. And he has special teams ability, and last year even did some things with the Philadelphia Eagles where he was a gunner. So he makes it. I think that you can see, I mean, David Moore easily makes it. Brandon Marshall makes it. I think there's no question that, Jaron Brown's going to make it. So I think those are going to be the six.
Boy, Brandon
Marcus John.
So Brandon Marshall goes from questionable on whether he makes the team when he comes here to maybe even being the number two receiver.
As soon as he started to go and practice the second week of training camp, I think he sealed the deal then. Because what you didn't know, if he was going to come back from the ankle, the foot, and then, of course, what was holding him back turns out to be the hamstring. Well, now, and you watch them in practice, and it was easy to see how comfortable he is. And, I know that Greg Bell wrote about it this past week. I mean, he's thinking that Marshall's challenging for the number two job. That may be a little bit much, but I don't think there's any question that he's going to make this team because, he has a uniqueness to what he's able to do. One, he knows where to go, that Russell Wilson can get him the ball. Two, he can make the back shoulder catch. Three, he can make just about any kind of a big catch, and he's so big and physical, he knocks down the cornerback. So, no, I think that I think that's the six. So, Darbo's probably going to be on the way out, and I would have to think that, you're probably going to see, Stringfellow go on the practice squad, and, I don't know what happens with McElvoy, but there's to me, Marcus Johnson now is too valuable. And you think about this, they all have, particularly, Brown has decent size and because he's a big, tall, fast receiver, but they're all 4-3 guys. They're 4-3 and they got some size. And so that to me makes it's a better athletic unit than they had last year. Do they have the catches? No. But then you have to throw them the ball to get the catches, and they can catch it. The fact that David Moore can return a punt for a touchdown, that adds to his value.
What about Keenan Reynolds?
He's close. I think he could be in the mix, because what you like about him is that he doesn't have the height and all that stuff. I guess in a lot of ways, he kind of mirrors what they had here for so many years. Maybe the shorter group on the wide receiving core, but like the way that as a former quarterback, he knows where to cut the routes to where the quarterback can get him the ball, and he has return ability too. But I think that what you like is bigger, faster in Marcus Johnson. But I think he's close too. Maybe there's, I don't know if he has practice squad eligibility or not, but no, I think that he's in the mix. I think right now he's ahead of Darbo.
Well, another thing that struck me last night, John, is I was thinking about Janikowski, and he looked good with the 35-yarder and the 55-yarder, yep. and the Seahawks releasing Jason Myers earlier in the week. But what are you thinking if you're a Vikings fan? So you've already gone through the Blair Walsh debacle, and then you mm-hmm. come back, and then they end up cutting Kai Forbath, and they hang on to the rookie from Auburn, Daniel Carlson, misses a pair of 42-yarders. Do you think they're going to bring Forbath back?
Depends on who you talk to. I think if you're talking to Mike Prefer, the special teams coach, no. I think if you're talking to Rick Spielman, the general manager, maybe. I can tell you this from Mike Zimmer. I think he'd like to bring back Forbath, because he at halftime, and what I do is I get what happens on the halftime interview with the coach, and he was furious. I mean, Carpenter is in the doghouse right now with Mike Zimmer. And what it came down to, because it was funny, because one of the sideline reporters is Greg Coleman, who used to be in this league. And so Carpenter came over, and I was right next to him, so I heard the whole conversation. And Carpenter said, I thought I hit that thing right. I thought it went over. And what Greg told him is like, no, you were rushing. He said, your mechanics were good, but you were rushing things. And so on those two field goals, he rushed it. I mean, the legs there, the continuity's there. But right now, I mean, when he comes out of the locker room, I mean, I guess he gets a dog bone, because right now he's in a dog house.
Yeah. I felt bad for the kid, but I couldn't help but think wherever Forbath was watching that game, he was like, yeah, you should have kept mm-hmm. me. You made a mistake.
If you're Forbath, you got to be thinking that, because they very well may have done it. I mean, that's what happens when you go with a rookie kicker like that. I mean, there's a lot of things he doesn't know yet. And of course, I think he's certainly got a quick education, but right now he's not in the good favor of his head coach.
Which is a little bit scary. Well, it's sure nice to see the Seahawks out there with a veteran kicker too, that Janikowski, yeah. And they flashed the graphic about how strong his leg is too. All the plus 50-yard field goals he's hit in his career, and so he's one of those guys.
55-yarder with ease last night.
Yeah, he's like Vinatieri. I mean, the guy might go for another 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's but is, I just wonder, and I happen to ask him about this, does he buy his jerseys or gets his jerseys from like 10, 15 years ago? I mean, don't they look like the jersey that he wears looks like one that when he came into the league in 2000 that he got?
It might be. What do you think it's an XXL or an XXXL, John?
Probably XXXL.
Yeah. There's something I like guys that look kind of dumpy like that are professional athletes.
I mean,
Wyman would say he's not really a professional athlete since he's a kicker, but boy, mm-hmm. when you have a bad kicker, you really value him. You understand the value when you have a bad one. And boy, everybody trashing on poor Blair Walsh last year, and mm-hmm. for good reason. But I think it's going to be fun with Janikowski this year.
No, I do too. And I mean, again, that looks like it turns out to be a very nice signing. And again, I like Jason Myers. I didn't see him miss a kick at all. But now you see the value. I mean, 55-yarder with ease. The ball goes into the end zone. It's hard to return on the kickoffs. And the guy's 40, and he hasn't hardly lost anything. Whether he's hardly lost weight or lost any ability. Hey, so what's on the golf show today?
The golf show, we've got all kinds of guests. We got Aaron Oberholzer, John. He's an on-course reporter for the Golf Channel. We're going to talk to, and we'll be talking about the Boeing Classic. And then we're also going to, the Northern Trust, it's the first FedEx Cup playoff event. We're going to talk to Rex Hogard from the Golf Channel and Brian Mogg. He's a local guy who's playing in the Boeing Classic. Sean Crew will be here, so it should be a fun golf show today from noon to 1.
Okay, so good. You get a good time on that. So that's the golf show coming up next. Jim Moore, thank you. I'll talk to you on Monday.
All right, Professor. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Boy, you talk about long distance. Joining us right now is Glenn in Tokyo. Glenn, are you really in Tokyo?
Yes, I'm in the middle of Tokyo, and it's 3-something in the morning. So I just had to ask you a question, John.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah, recently I've been noticing that there's a lot more emphasis being put on the level of intelligence in the NFL. You know, not just the QBs anymore, but it seems like everybody needs to be much smarter, you know, not just football smarts, but also have much higher intelligence. You see this at the tests, at the combine, the Wunderlich test. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that players in the past, like Aaron Curry and Christian Michael, and maybe even Ifedi, seems to have some problems with playing on teams because of maybe their little bit lack of IQ or intelligence. What do you think is happening nowadays? Do you think that there's less brawn and more brain is needed nowadays in the NFL?
Well, I mean, the problem is it depends on certain years, because you don't know in certain years how many players are coming out from underclassmen. And I think it's a tool, but I don't think it's a trend, because the Wunderlich test has been around for 30, 35 years, and it really hasn't changed too much. And different teams and, you know, different things have been used to try to judge that. But, I mean, you can only go with what's going to be there in a particular year. Like, you know, from just a position standpoint, I mean, 2014, there was a lot of great wide receivers. You look at this year's draft, there was a lot of good running backs. Some years, for example, you may get a lot of underclassmen, but they may not have the highest scores. And, you know, there's going to be guys that, you know, in this draft and next year's draft and the draft after that, that are going to be, you know, less than 10 on the Wunderlich. And, of course, the way the grades are done on the Wunderlich is how many answers you can complete in a short period of time. You've got 50 questions. And, you know, it's like, for example, if you are ADD or something like that, you may not be able to read through the 50 questions, and you may be intelligent, but you may only be able to get a 15 or a 16 because you're not quick in being able to respond. So it's just a tool, but it doesn't necessarily mean that a player with a low Wunderlich or a player with, you know, questionable intelligence can't succeed. If you're going to be a team, you just have to put the judgment in there, see how they are as a person. I know the character stuff is more important, and that goes in flows. I mean, some years you don't worry about character, and then you have a couple years where guys just keep getting arrested and trouble like that, then you go more to character. So it varies every year, but it still ultimately comes down to what's going to be available in that particular draft.
Yeah, but it seems like nowadays there's more and more schemes, you know, and people have to take home, it's no longer books, it's iPads, it's full and full of all these different plays and everything, and of course, it used to be just the QB had to like study all the time, all the time. But now, you know, listening to various interviews of players, it seemed like, you know, pretty much they go home, they study, they take naps, they get up, wake up, and study again. It seemed like you have to have a pretty high aptitude of studying and learning things very quickly, and then remembering them on the fly. I think you have to be a little bit smarter than you used to be.
You do. No, because again, but I mean, you do have the advantage now that you can have the tablets that you can take home and study and all that stuff. And that does help. But also understand that it's like, and this is where, you know, you can't necessarily, you know, you want as many intelligent players as you have, but you also have to realize we're in a changing time right now. And the concern over concussions is causing a major adjustment both now and in the future. Because now you have more moms basically saying, I'm not going to let my son go out there and get a concussion. And so you may have, you know, intelligent guys that don't get the opportunity to play football. And so now, I mean, you just have to judge what's going to be there. And that can be a problem. I mean, you know, you have certain players that go out and they just can't pick things up, and naturally it takes over. And then the other problem is, you know, it takes you 3 years to equal the number of practices that you used to have before 2011. So even if you're reasonably smart, you may have a difficult time picking things up because there's just not enough time to execute it on the practice field. So if you're a coach, this is a very tough time to be able to do things. And then, of course, the concussion thing really makes you worry about the future and where that's going to go. So all you can do is kind of adjust to do what's going to be there and available for you.
Yeah, well, nowadays now you have to also now tackle with your shoulders, make sure your head is up. Just another thing you have to think about on the fly. You know, it's just more and more demands on someone's intelligence when they have to make a decision within a split second.
Exactly. No, it's a challenge. I mean, that's why if you're coaching the National Football League, I mean, you are really challenged to be able to get all these things done in a short period of time. That's why John Gruden stayed away from it in part for so many years, because he realized how much more difficult it was. And, I mean, you can see even a Bill Belichick has to try to make constant adjustments. I mean, that's why, for example, you know, Bill Belichick, because of the limited practice time, you know, he can't tell you what he's going to have as far as a full defense until probably, you know, October or the beginning of November, because it takes him that while to kind of sort through that with the number of practices to get the things that he needs and how to make the judgments on it.
Yeah, I wonder if that's why John Gruden only likes to pick veterans and no longer, you know, rookies, because he really doesn't have time and the fortitude to try to teach these guys football smarts anymore. There's just not enough time.
Yeah, that's the reason. And that's the reason why you can see what Bill Belichick does. He tries to trade for players in the third or fourth year of their rookie contracts, because by that third year, at least they have the 1 year of experience on the practice field that may help pick things up better. So, yeah, it's an adjusting time right now and a very difficult one. Hey, very good call, and thank you.
Okay, thank you. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey.
Hello,
Irish Mankey, how are you?
Mr. Clayton.
And how's it going?
Hope you have a safe journey home. You know, Mr. Clayton, I want to take time out to tell you, you are a superman, Mr. Clayton, for what you do for that lovely wife of yours. I took care of my mother for 9 years, and it was probably the greatest thing I've done in my life, to make that kind of commitment to somebody special to you who you love. And, and to do the hard work to carry the water, as they say, that a lot of people just won't do, Mr. Clayton, sadly.
Hey, that's what I proposed and promised to do.
If there was a trophy or award I could nominate you to, I'd do it, because you are one of those very special people.
Oh, well, thank you.
Keep up the great work, Mr. Clayton.
I will do that.
The only thing you need to do now is you need to go Irish, Mr. Clayton.
I might hold off on that. Let's put it this way. I know I'm not married to that idea.
Okay. So, Mr. Clayton, a couple of quick things. First of all, the toughest schedule rankings came out, and Notre Dame is number 3. They play Pitt number 4, Michigan number 7, Stanford 13, USC 17. But I could not find anywhere the Washington Huskies. Well, so, Irish with an 11-1 schedule, they're in the playoffs. No question about it. I do believe...
But what if they don't go 11-1?
...heavily, although they won't admit it, to strength of schedule. It makes a difference. It really does. But
again, the strength of schedule is one thing, but that's now raising a difficult time.
Announcers for Notre Dame are in. Ryan Harris, you ever heard of him?
Yeah, I have.
He's the color now. And this Burmeister is going to be the play-by-play.
Wow.
NBC
I like
guy.
Paul.
So, well, let's talk NFL real quick, because I know I'm running out of time.
Right.
So, C.J. Prosci, does he make the team?
Yes.
Was this a deal... for him to be traded, or he actually is going to make the team?
No, I think because I was thinking about this in the sidelines last night. What they haven't had a back since 2014 that's been able to, or 2015 or so, that has been able to start more than 7 games. Okay, so because of that, now you need volume and you need quality. And C.J. Prosci, even though again I don't think he ran as hard as he should have last night, he still leads the team in catches with 8. I mean, he's still good at what he does, and so I think. What it comes down to, you need to keep that extra back, because you figure the way luck has been for this team, there are going to be more injuries at the running back position. And so, he's 225, 230. He can catch the ball. He's their best pass-catching running back, and he can run hard at 225. So I think that, in case there's going to be injuries, you keep as many as you can, because you may not be able to get the full service of all the running backs all the way through.
I think he knows the sword of Damocles is hanging over his neck, and it's unfortunate, the injuries, but yeah, I hope he does make the team. And about the new rookie from Notre Dame playing for the Eagles, what do you think of Josh Adams?
It looks like he's going to be the number 4 wide receiver. I noticed they cut Steven Roberts
back.
Today.
They're going to move him to wide receiver.
Oh, the running back. Okay. Yeah, but, I mean, I guess he's going to be okay. I don't know.
He'll
hard
make
to
the
tell.
Team, right? That's all I'm really pushing for here.
Still questionable. So? Still questionable.
Okay. To wrap it up with you, ESPN favors the Irish in every game. They okay. also mentioned in the article that was on ESPN.com or whatever it is, the Irish have a real shot at making the playoffs, Mr. Clayton.
Well, now, let me see. Now, what Seattle team, Seattle-based team, has been ahead of them in every other ranking?
Well, Mr. Clayton, not in strength of schedule, not playing the
strength. Last I checked, the strength of schedule does not determine wins. Strength of schedule makes
right.
it tougher
and
to
it
win.
It will be all about the wins, baby.
That's correct.
You know, that great man, Davis, just win, baby.
Just win, baby.
Just
hey, thanks.
Win.
I got to get it going here.
Mr. Clayton, you're
thank
the
you.
Greatest. God bless you.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Evan. Evan, how are you?
Hey, John Clayton. And what's your theory on what happened to Paxton Lynch? I mean, this guy, I mean, he looks, I mean, I feel bad he's in boots. I mean, he just looks lost out there. So what's your theory on what happened to him? Was it our team, the coaching staff put him down, or is it on his shoulders? Thank you.
It's on his shoulders. Yeah, it's on his shoulders. I know the first year, what was told to me, there was he didn't work as hard as he should, didn't pick things up like he should, and was really just kind of lost. And, you know, that's more on him because, I mean, you need to put the work in. I mean, he certainly had the talent. I mean, you can see he's got first-round talent, but he didn't work as hard the first year. Now, in the second first off season that he had, he did a little bit better. But everything was told to me that Trevor Siemian was miles ahead of him. And think about this. I mean, Simeon's a seventh-round pick, who really is more of a backup than anything else. And at no time did Lynch be able to show that he could even beat out him. It was like it was never even close. I mean, his accuracy wasn't there. I mean, he didn't seem to be able to read the defenses like he should. So you throw all that together, I mean, he just turns out to be a bad draft choice. And that happens a lot of times. I mean, you know, it's 50-50 a lot of times when you're looking in the first-round quarterbacks. And, you know, he was one that they took a gamble on. The gamble didn't work out. I mean, again, when you're coming out of Memphis or so and you have a spread offense, it's an adjustment to come into the NFL, and he just never made the adjustment. And so now you know what the Broncos want to do. I mean, they give him away for a seventh-round pick in 2020 if somebody would trade for him and take the guarantee contracts away from them. But I don't think anybody's going to do that. So they have to decide if they want to just cut him and eat the contract or just keep him as a third quarterback and keep somebody else off the roster. Tough decision. And you know at the moment the Broncos don't know what they have for a backup quarterback. So that's not good. Thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Commando Dave. Hello, David.
Hey, what's up, John Clayton?
Just sitting here in Minnesota getting ready to go down to Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, yeah, there you go. What's going on down there?
Got a fantasy convention tomorrow. Usually go there for the ESPN station. Yeah.
Yeah, good, good. Yeah, have fun down there. Hey, look, man, the closer we get to football season, the more John Clayton Show listeners I seem to randomly run into. So let me give a shout-out to Wes the Penny Man, who I had a great Seahawks conversation with at Safeway yesterday. And while I'm giving shout-outs, John Clayton, let me give one to Cooper's Ale House for their 35th anniversary. Big party tonight in Lake City. So congratulations to Brian and Matt. And if I'm giving congratulations shout-outs, I should give one to Matt Nelson for consistently getting the John Clayton Show podcast up faster than any other sports show in Seattle. And John Clayton, as I was listening to myself last week on the show, giving tribute to the Queen of Soul and talking about Fremont Coffee playing a day's worth of songs in her honor, I sounded like I was doing an Eddie Murphy delirious bit when I botched R-E-S-P-E-C-T. And I listened with shock and horror to my stuttering and stammering while trying to be informative and respectful. I didn't think it was possible for anyone to sound more ridiculous than I did. And then Urban Meyer beer and took the mic. What was your take on the Urban Meyer press conference, John Clayton?
terrible, absolutely horrendous. I mean, you know, to me, I mean, he should not have lost his job, but to first off, you know, only have three games like that for, you know, basically ignoring what was going on. I mean, I, and then not showing any remorse to the wife. That was horrible. And it's like, you know, every excuse was made. Well, he has to take medication sometimes to remember things. It's like, what's this? It's like, what is his problem? Right. I mean, his problem is that, you know, he had these type of problems at Florida. He had these type of problems now at Ohio State. It's like, you know, don't you think there's a problem there? I mean, and have three games where he's only, like, away from the team for, like, 1 week. That's terrible. And then the press conference was awful. I mean, you know, to go back, you go back to July, and they try to make an excuse for him. Right. You know, again, use saying it was the medication and the forgetfulness and all this stuff. You know, what? How can he? Does he not show any sympathy at all for the woman that was beaten this bad? Horrible, absolutely horrible. I mean, he should have been suspended for half the season, if not more. Wow. I mean, put on notice that the next incident that involves anything in that program, you know, he's on notice that that could end it. So, you know, I just think that they let him get away with this.
Yeah, it was a bad day for college football, surpassed only by the Big Ten media day to kick the original domino over. Moving to the Seahawks right quick, John Clayton. I didn't see the game last night, but the clip of K.J. Wright blasting a Vikings receiver is making the rounds on Twitter. Was there a flag thrown on that play?
No, there was not. It was
a good hit.
I mean, the one thing that was nice is that, I mean, that's the thing that I know that, you know, they gave up too many yards. They gave up, they didn't stop drives. I mean, Kirk Cousins was able to work the short passes, and they need to, you know, get some things cleaned up in that regard. But the hitting was good, and the tackling was good. And I think that you can see that, you know, whether it's the Australian stuff that they use, the rugby-type tackling or whatever it is good because you're able to get those hits and not get too many penalties.
Well,
because, you know, when you think about what that hit that KJ made, that's like a Cam Chancellor type of hit. I mean, it's a different style, but it's the same result.
Yeah, and instead of throwing a flag on the defensive player in a situation like that, the ref should consider throwing a flag on the quarterback for hanging his receiver out like that. But anyway, John Clayton, as the Seahawks are getting ready to play one final fake game, the Washington Football Huskies are preparing to play the first real game one day from today. In fact, the best thing about the John Clayton Show ending next week is that 30 minutes later, the Dogs and the Tigers kick off in Atlanta. And let's face it, we all love the Hawks. But real football fans, John Clayton, not fantasy guys who keep trying to slip in calls to the show, real football fans will tell you football in Seattle begins and ends with the Washington Huskies, since the Dogs were playing football long before the Seahawks were a glimmer in John Nordstrom's offshore account. I know you're the professor of the NFL, but just let me ask you, is there any one of your college football colleagues, you've had a Husky football conversation that you came away with something that you didn't know about the Dogs?
Well, I'm all, because I don't get to spend as much time on college as I do the NFL, I'm always learning about things. So it's like, you know, it's like I'm always eager for every part of the education. And so there's so many more things I'd like to learn. I mean, for example, my feel is that where the team is criticized for being thin at wide receiver and pass rushers, I think that they'll probably end up being better because, you know, you knew that was going to be a question. And so that was something that Chris Peterson, I'm sure, can address. And so I just think that he has the answers because I think he's that good.
And lastly, John Clayton, shout out to Glenn in Tokyo for the 3:30 a.m. to the John Clayton Show.
How about that? That's a first.
I'm telling you. Best to Mrs. Clayton. Talk to you next week, John Clayton.
Okay, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. This is the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Seattle. You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
And our thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show, and our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor, how are you?
Hey, John, another great show.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, a couple quick ones. First off, yeah, the Paxton hasn't done anything, but his coaching staff did let him down his first year and maybe his second. They didn't really help him progress, but he doesn't have it up top anyways. A couple quick ones about Denver. I think they have a lot of faith in Callie being a backup quarterback. I don't think they should bring a second veteran quarterback coming in, and I do see Paxton getting cut.
Yeah, then, I think that what they're hoping for is somebody wants to take a chance on him and just take the guaranteed contract away, but probably nobody's going to do that.
You see him, you know how they installed the Tebow offense where it was, you know, handoff, 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 and every once in a while play action pass? Would that have benefit Paxton a while ago?
I don't know, because again, it's like I just don't know how quickly he's picked up anything. That's what you wonder about. It's like I know the first year so much was on him because he wasn't picking things up well, and then it's just like he just didn't advance. And maybe it's unfair the way this league is, because, you know, should you give up on somebody after 3 years? I still go back to the 70s, and, you know, it would take sometimes 4 and 5 years for a quarterback to emerge, and that's on an offense that was so simple because you didn't have to worry about nickel. It was just handoff, and, you know, didn't have third receivers and slot guys and stuff like that.
Yeah, because even when Elway drafted him, he said it was a three-year project, and it's possibly another three-year project unless he wants to move to tight end. Quick question, John, about the Bronco offensive line. I like the way that's progressed, but with Bowles still having issues, is this a mental thing with his penalties, the holding, and that type of stuff, or is that just like a footwork, or is he just not talented?
No, I think it's just learning. I mean, he's just not there yet, but, I mean, the talent's there, but, I mean, he has to kind of sort himself through that. But, hey, listen, it's like, is it any different than Jermaine Ifedi and what he's going through? I think that Bowles will be fine. I think that, but, again, you're right. I mean, he is struggling in that regard, and it's mostly on him. But, second year, I think he'll get through it, but the question is when.
Yeah, definitely. You got any series coming up this week?
Wednesday and Friday.
Okay. And then one thing, I know Commando should look out at Costco. I believe they have a sale on paper towels and napkins so he could wipe up his tears when Denver beats Seattle the first week, John. Take care, bud.
Okay. All right, Victor, thanks. Let's close it out here with Scott before we go to the golf show. Scott, how are you?
Hey, doing good. Just a couple questions. How many receivers do you think the Hawks are going to keep?
I think six. And I think that Marcus Johnson made the argument for the sixth receiver last night, because I think that he's been doing well in practice. He's also on special teams. I think that you can see they're going to probably keep six wide receivers. And the question is, can they keep
like
five
David
running backs?
Definitely has that fifth spot. What do you think?
No, I think he's three, four, or five.
Three? Oh, really? Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Do you think Amar Darboe has a chance to make the team?
I think it's tough now. I think he's kind of on the outside looking in, because he's not as fast as the other guys, and he's a guy right now that hasn't been healthy.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Scott, thank you. Got to run. This golf show is coming up next. After that, of course, we come back on Monday. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.